The Church's Middle Eastern Adventure, a downloadable audio tour. The Olana Partnership's downloadable audio tour program is designed to give the museum and park visitors a unique view into the archives at Olana. This program makes public for the first time letters and journal entries from Frederick and Isabel Church's extensive travels in the Middle East in the late 1860s. Specifically, you will hear from an edited collection of Church letters and journal entries from Isabel's diary. As part of the larger digital humanities program in development at Olana, the 2018 audio tour links to themes in our exhibition titled Costume and Custom, the Middle Eastern Threads at Olana, designed to illuminate the travels that inspired both Olana and many works of art by Church for years to come. The name Olana resonates with the family's Middle Eastern adventures. For many years, the churches called their property simply the farm. The name Olana first appeared written Olane as a heading in a letter written by Isabel Church. A contemporary newspaper article credited her as the originator of the name of the house, explaining the old Latin name for a place in Persia to which the artist's home bears some resemblance in situation. Scholars have linked the name to a translated volume of Strabo's Geographica, a Christmas gift from Isabel to Frederick in 1879. Strabo's publication described the geography of the Roman Empire and referenced the city of Olane as one of the treasure house storehouses on the Arxus River, which offered beautiful views of Mount Ararat, where Noah's Ark was said to rest. It is likely that the churches appreciated the associations this name had to their own Persian-inspired stone fortress situated high above the Hudson River with majestic views west to America's promised land. Church playfully called his house Persian, adapted to the Occident. Many design details are adapted from Middle Eastern sources, including the arched windows, balcony woodwork, and tilework. In overall form, however, the house resembles many other 19th century villas, with joined blocks of massing and picturesque fashion, a corner tower, and a Mansfield roof with pronounced cornices. The following audio tour creates access to the voices and experiences of the churches while traveling through many regions in the Middle East. It can be listened to on a bench on site while looking at the architecture and the landscape, or it can be downloaded or streamed anywhere. If you're listening on site, we encourage earphone use or certainly low volume so as not to interrupt the quiet of our other visitors. The audio tour is about 1 hour in length, both by Church and by Isabel, and can be stopped and started at any time. The Olana Partnership wishes to thank site manager Kimberly Flook for her support in editing this content, and the collections at the Olana State Historic Site who own and care for Church's collections through the New York State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation. Thanks to Amy Huffnagel, the Director of Education at TOP, for the production and direction of this tour, as well as our talented local actors, Anne Underland and Jim Frangoni. Anne is an actor and a playwright who lives in Chatham, New York, and Jim is an actor and playwright who has performed hundreds of audiobooks and is also the co-artistic director of the Berkshire Playwrights Lab in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. The Olana Partnership is pleased to work with the expert team at Wave Farm and WGXC and their talented team of sound artists and engineers. Please join us in thanking the members of the Olana Partnership and our Board of Trustees for their ongoing support of our educational work. If you enjoy this digital programming, please make note of it when you fill out our visitor survey. Tell your friends, and we hope you'll consider becoming a member of TOP to support the archive and our work in making it public. Please note, pronouncing certain words of places recorded by the churches was an interesting challenge. Sometimes words were spelled phonetically, other times regionally accurate. This recording holds true to the church spellings and their historic uses.
Hudson, October 25th, 1867. My dear Mr. Osborne, I didn't send the donkey today because the morning opened very cold, and as he is a tropical donkey, an exotic, I thought it would be more prudent to wait for the warm change which is sure to follow. Expect him on Monday or Tuesday. He is getting a green overcoat made for him by Michael so that he may not look too shabby. He should be kept well covered this winter. I am trying to buy the roadway out through Sally Benham's farm. I may succeed. I shall need about 6 acres stretched out a half mile, all splendid woods. The whole farm is for sale. I only fear that someone will buy it who will refuse to sell such fine woods. I have heard within a day or two that a gentleman is pondering the question of buying it. We have arranged to go down on Tuesday to Brevcourt House for a few days. I shall come up here for a couple of days before I leave to see that the coast is clear. The carpenters have not got through yet. They have just built a little building to accommodate a coachman in case that our house is let next summer. I find that since I have been on the farm, I have built 10 distinct buildings, and they haven't cost much either. Remodeling and covering and roofing my old barn and building the new one, holding 50 tons of hay, cost $865.56 this summer. I hope Jessup will take the horses. They are now the only things on my mind. All else is arranged for. I haven't painted much since I saw you. I couldn't. I have been overworked and in consequence have been out of sorts, rather. Caught cold, etc. Mean to paint tomorrow for the last day here. It is hard to leave the beautiful country, but once away we shall enjoy the new things of life and health are spared to us. I have packed a box of grapes for the steamer. They are fine and, I hope, still keep. We picked yesterday the remaining vines clean. The flowers were highly appreciated, as you may well suppose. We desire to send our best love to you all. In haste, yours sincerely, Frederick E. Church. P.S. They have commenced making a fine road to Oak Hill Station, just as we are leaving. I enclose Kirby's bill for hams, receipted. Letter written by Frederick E. Church to Mr. Weeks, gift of James Satterwhite, Paris, December 25th, 1867. My dear Mr. Weeks, in the midst of packing, I drop all to make sure a moment to wish you and yours a Merry Christmas. We got your and Mrs. Weeks' letter yesterday. To our great delight, it was the first intimation we had had that the news of our safe arrival had reached home. We were glad to hear that you were all progressing well as usual. Isabel has had a tumor under her arm, but is doing well. The doctor here applied the lancet. He saw that there is no reason, with a little care, why she should not soon be a well woman in all respects. The weather here is universally gloomy and chilly, so have not had one really fine day since we arrived, and I found it worse in London, although I think the climate there more healthy. Mrs. Carnes is well and active as ever, and travels about Paris as if she had never left it. The baby is splendid, and toddles about alone in high rapture at his own acquirements. We are to leave tomorrow morning for Maisel, en route for Beirut. The steamer sails on the 29th, and we expect to reach Alexandria about the 4th of January. We may remain in Alexandria 3 or 4 days. If so, we shall go to Cairo and see the pyramids, etc. Edmund Allout, the French author, he of the King of the Mountains, etc., goes in the same steamer. We also expect some American acquaintances to be fellow passengers. Paris is a gay place in spite of mud and drizzle and chilly air. And I can readily believe that in mild weather these streets must be brilliant with life. London is gloomy and dirty, yet there is an inner life there which I can see is more worth living for than the fascinating brightness of Paris. London has too little taste. Paris has too much. Mrs. Carnes has half written a letter to you, and I intended to enclose mine in hers, but she now tells me that, owing to her packing, she must postpone finishing it. It is now midnight, and we have all been at it through the day, and of course are tired. This will be excuse enough for my letters. I mean, it's craziness. My address for the present remains the same, care of Hottinger & Company. I will write when I am sure of my next address. We have seen so much that it does not seem possible that only 5 weeks or so since we left New York. We anticipate much from our coming trips. I have learned a good deal about the countries we propose to go to. All unite in pronouncing Beirut delightful. Well, I will have my say, too, soon, I hope. Tell Mr. John Weeks that Morlaix is delightful. Did he stop at a hotel near the station, or did he go down into the rich picturesqueness of the old town? I am much obliged to him for recommending us to stop there. I must stop here. Accept our best love and best wishes, all of you. Yours sincerely, Frederick E. Church. P.S. I hope that none of my business has given you trouble. Alexandria, January 6th, 1868. Dear Mr. Osborne, we arrived here after a quiet passage from Marseilles on the 4th, all terribly sick. Short waves and a screw ship and not ballasted enough, so we rolled about as if we were tossed on the imitation waves of a theater. Wifey stood it the best of any, but finally had to succumb. Baby was ill several times, but came out of it quickly and was all right in a moment. Mrs. Carnes was miserably ill. As for your humble servant, he prefers to dismiss the subject. The weather was delicious. Mild the whole passage, and after leaving Messina, peeled myself down to June proportions. The steamer Palouse is a fine one, and the saloon on deck delightful. There were very few passengers, and all quiet and well-behaved. There was an American family, Mrs. Potter and two daughters from Cincinnati on board, accompanied by a courier and governess. Of what mortal use the governess is, I can't see. They were intending to go up the Nile in a steamboat so as to see Jerusalem and get into Spain and Italy this season. But as there were some Americans going up the Nile in a small boat, one Mr. Briggs, son of Governor Briggs of Massachusetts, who would be glad to have them accompany them, I suggested this program, that they should go up the Nile in a small boat 2 months to go to Jaffa and Jerusalem, etc., then to Beirut, Damascus, and Baalbek, then to Constantinople, returning by way of Athens and Trieste, which will be in their course as they wish to go to Russia, putting off Spain, etc., until the next season. They have time in abundance at their command, and don't intend to return to the States for a year or two. I have longed, sadly, to go up the Nile and make studies of the great monuments of the past, but with my family I cannot do so unless I place them in some favorable spot, which is not to be found here. I have been profoundly interested in Petra. I find that there is now no difficulty in getting there, and even in staying several days, which would be all important to me. I would not think of going if I was not tolerably sure of at least 3 days of uninterrupted work. Paolo Nuzio, a dragoman recommended by the consul as the best, has been to see me several times. He has made a dozen trips to Petra and took Stevens the traveler there. He offers to take 4 to Petra for $400, 6 for $480, and 8 for $560, time including ample stoppages. 35 days to Jerusalem from Cairo, of course visiting Sinai, etc. There is not much probability of my going, for I can hardly find 3 other persons wanting to go within the time I could parcel out. But I have arranged in this way. Tomorrow we start for Beirut, which we shall probably reach on the 10th in the morning, a 2.5 or 3 days trip. I shall immediately get into comfortable quarters, if possible, and which I expect are ready, as it was arranged for a month ago, and I suppose Mr. and Mrs. Dodge are now there, as well as some other friends. If everything looks right and all is comfortably arranged, I shall try and drum up enough to make at least 4 a party for Petra and return to Alexandria. It is not likely that I shall find as many or perhaps any who could or would go, but the consul will be on the lookout here and write. There is no traveling in Syria for some time, say 2.5 months. I could employ myself on 2 or 3 small pictures, but could do little in the way of sketching. It does seem a pity to spend the time in indoor work which might be employed in securing in color the splendors of the Casni, the Sikh, etc., which makes Petra so marvelously splendid. My sketches, in a pecuniary point of view, would be worth more than the 2 pictures I might paint at Beirut. Isabel is very anxious that I should go, and I think that I will, provided first that I can get her and family pleasantly and comfortably quartered, where they can have social as well as other advantages, and second, if I can make up a party. I should like to make a trip in this way, returning to Alexandria and Cairo, and go up in the steamer to Thebes. Let the steamer go on while I stay and sketch until her return, and then return to Cairo. Paolo says that he would want 8 days to send a messenger to Scaba to request the sheik there to have camels all ready as soon as we arrived. Otherwise, we would necessarily be detained at Scaba. 8 days, so I could either sketch around Cairo or, by taking 2 weeks more time, see Thebes, etc., and get some splendid studies. In either case, I could get back to Beirut before the season was advanced enough to commence travel in Syria. There is no difficulty at all in going to Palmyra and staying as long as is necessary. It is a short trip. I am glad to learn that the trip to Baalbek is very easy indeed, and that there is not the slightest difficulty in the way of my taking my wife there and staying as long as we like. A day's additional ride will bring us to Lebanon. Of course, she can easily go to Damascus with me and Jerusalem, etc. If I go to Petra, I should figure after a cursory glance at Jerusalem enough to learn the paints, etc., to make a straight course for Jaffa and Beirut to return at a more favorable season with wifey. Excuse a long, rambling rattle of my plans. I wish you were here to discuss them with me. I am anxious to carry home a plump wife and a plump portfolio, even at the expense of an uncommonly lean purse, for which the domestic bliss of a fat wife and splendid studies, I think I could soon replenish the purse. Just think of a series of studies in oil presenting the great features of Thebes, etc., Sinai, Petra, Palmyra, Damascus, Baalbek, Lebanon, Jerusalem, etc., etc. I have not said anything about Alexandria, since you know the place, but I must remark that it is the noisiest and dirtiest place I was ever in. Everything talks, or gabbles, or squeals, or groans, or screeches, or howls perpetually. The camels only represent silence. This hotel, the Peninsular and Oriental, is quite good. You will be surprised, perhaps, to learn that although we have been here since noon Saturday, it is now Monday night, that we did not go to Cairo to see the pyramids and something of the remains of Egypt's ancient greatness. We had such a rolling and pitching at sea that I did not think it prudent to suggest to Isabel to go, as I felt that she needed perfect rest. I might have gone myself, perhaps, on Saturday and returned today, provided Sunday had not been Sunday. We went to a pretty Oriental piece of architecture on Sunday and heard English service. I say heard. Fact is that a parcel of little birds were constantly flying in and out of the windows, chirping and piping and lighting here and there in the most distracting manner. The sermon may have been interesting, but I fear not. There are now about a dozen American families up the Nile, all having a proportion of ladies. There are no Englishmen up the Nile at present. I have directed my friends to direct letters to the care of J. Duchesne and Company, Beirut. They are the correspondents of Morton. I did so for two reasons. First, because Baring's correspondents are a branch of the Ottoman Bank there, and I thought perhaps letters might not get the proper attention. And secondly, because I fancied Morton would be pleased to have me, since you remarked that he was anxious to have me use my credit on him in Syria. I shall, of course, present myself at the branch Ottoman's Bank and inquire for letters as well as to the American consulate. We are all well, although Isabel has not felt quite so well today as usual. We hope to hear soon that you and yours are all right, that the younger ones progress with their lessons. We have missed you all exceedingly, and Isabel particularly missed you at sea, for she was generally at table, and oftentimes was the only lady there. A little girl, the youngest daughter of Mrs. Potter, should, however, be mentioned as a steady occupant of her seat at mealtime. Do let us have a long letter from among you, and inform us in everything that affects your health and movements generally. You are the connecting link between us and home, and our thoughts cannot travel back to America without stopping at Paris to greet you all. Accept our best love for each and all. Sincerely yours, Frederick E. Church. Beirut, January 13, 1868. My dear Mr. Osborne, my last verbose letter ought to suffice for a month, but as we have arrived at the end of our sea voyaging for some time, I am prompted to bore you yet again. The trip from Alexandria to Beirut was really lovely, the sea being as smooth as the Hudson River. The steamer, the Tiber, was the most agreeable vessel I was ever on, apart from the fine weather, too. The staterooms were very spacious and well ventilated. The table was well supplied with excellent wholesome food, cooked plainly. During part of the voyage, we were the only passengers. Up this coast, the steamers sail during the night and remain in some port all day. The first day was spent at Port Said, one terminus of the Suez Canal, the second at Jaffa. We reached Beirut early in the morning of the 10th. Our hotel, the Bellevue, is a pretty good one. We have enormous rooms, ceilings 30 feet high and marble floors, furniture scant, plenty to eat. The weather during sunshine is warm, cooling off at night. No fires, for there are no fireplaces or stoves. Today being stormy, we had brought into our rooms copper braziers with hot coals. The climate is evidently more agreeable than that of Alexandria, and the city far more attractive. Beirut is beautifully situated at the foot of a high range of mountains, which are now snow-clad, and the mountainsides are dotted all over with villages, convents, etc. From the houses on the summit of the hill on which the city is built, the views are charming. The housetops are flat and generally have a room or two built upon them with stairs leading to the roof, so that it is convenient as well as agreeable to enjoy frequently the fine panorama. The society here is, of course, very fine. We had hardly got into the hotel before Mr. D. Stewart Dodge made his appearance, the first to welcome us. He had arrived with his family 10 days previously. Soon others called, so that before 24 hours had elapsed, we felt that we were among friends. The Dodges have rented a fine house, and in 2 or 3 days will start their own establishment. I have looked at 2 houses, both of which I like. One can be had for about $40 per month or less, the other probably considerably cheaper. The large one has an immense hall, I should say 45 by 30 feet, and 7 large bedrooms, etc., all on one floor, with superb views. Neither of the houses is furnished, but I applied to a well-known dragoman here, an honest one, and proposed that he should fit out our establishment and run the machine for us at some fixed sum per day. He agrees to do so, furnishing for about the same price which he asked for 2 rooms and public table. I have had a stove put into the nursery, running the pipe through the window, for when it rains it is chilly and damp. The weather generally delicious. Of course we have concluded to stay. I have had an easel made, and shall commence one of the small pictures just as soon as I am relieved from the pain of a huge fiery boil which is now afflicting me. The rest are well. I have received an application for 3 pictures from Mr. Phelps in the States through Mr. Dodge. I purchased 2 Persian rugs because I needed them. These marble floors are cold, and there is, to be sure, a mat covered by a large rug in each room, but there is a margin uncovered by the divans, etc. I paid $10 apiece. I purchased them under the advice of Mr. Dodge, but have since heard that I can get the same thing for $6. Beirut is a better place than Beirut. When I find where and how I can get them the cheapest, I will purchase 2 small and 2 larger ones for your use, if that number suits your wants. Have you any direction to give me about sending the small picture to London? So I am not certain that MacLean of London will have the charge of the Niagara. I am not disposed to send him a list of the names of a few whom I should like to have the entree of the gallery. I take the liberty of sending them to you, begging you to copy them and give them to Mr. Goupil, with the request that they may have cards for self and friends. The greater part are your friends, but I will write them down to save you the trouble of thinking. Also, other names will occur to you whom you may wish to have included. Borthwick, Bevel, Caird, Eaton, Benson, Morton, Tom Taylor, 8 Richmond Terrace, Whitehall. Mr. Windsor, care of Windsor and Newton, 38 Rathbone Place, Oxford Street. Miss Amelia B. Edwards, 19 Gloucester Place, Portman Square. James Philp, care of T. McLean, 7 Haymarket. G. H. Bowton, 8 Denby Road, Baywater. In the little parcel I left at the Hotel Chatham, there is a letter of introduction to a Mr. Bailey, who has written much about my pictures. His address is, of course, on the envelope. These are all I think of. I suppose that the picture will be exhibited at McLean's, but have had no assurances. May I ask you, when you go again to London, to send me Murray's handbooks of Switzerland, Turkey, and Constantinople, and of South Germany, Tyrol, etc. I need them all. You can't imagine how kind and devoted our new friends are here. They form a noble society. Every steamer brings a troop of Americans who troop off to Damascus. I have arranged to leave here about the 12th for Jerusalem, en route for Petra. A Scotch gentleman, whom I like, is desirous to go with me, and very likely we may pick up a couple more. Dr. Thompson much fears now that business will prevent his going. I shall not stop long in Jerusalem, as I wish to bring Isabel down so that we may see it together. I hope to hear that you are all well and enjoying yourselves, and that your business matter has turned out a success. We expect letters tomorrow for the first time since we arrived in Syria. Address letters to care of I, August Johnson, Consul General of the United States of America, Beirut, Syria. Cook, servants, etc. A very liberal table. Horses to be kept in the stable belonging to the house. Washing. Indeed, everything for 45 francs per day. He to buy for our use horses that shall be approved. As the table he proposes is more luxurious than we require or desire, and as his terms have not as yet been brought under the pressure of residence here, I am hopeful that he may be willing to take care of us for a considerably less sum. The residents here say that this dragoman will do what he promises. The hotel charge is 10 English shillings per day apiece, no extra charges. The hotel is right on the seashore, and while I write, I hear the sea roaring under my windows. We attended the American church on Sunday, a clever sermon from a bashful Scotchman. In the congregation, I noticed Dr. Bliss, Dr. Thompson, Dr. Van Dyke, etc., etc. They are building a very fine new church, one which would grace Fifth Avenue. Dr. Thompson, the author of The Land and the Book, is quite anxious to go with me to Petra. I trust that he will. I find that Petra is more accessible from this side than the other. My dragoman, which is familiar with route, agrees to take me to Petra in 6 days from Jerusalem, but advises me not to start until March. Our consul, Johnson, is trying to arrange to accompany me to Palmyra in April. Baalbek is close at hand. Damascus is easily reached by diligence. Leaving Beirut at 4 a.m. and reaching Damascus at 5:30 p.m., I think that I can easily accomplish all I wish by the middle of May. Then we hope to go to Constantinople via Smyrna, a trip of 4 or 5 days, then return to Smyrna and go to Athens, a sail of a day and a half, I think, stop over one steamer a week, and then go to Trieste and so to the Tyrol, etc. I think that I shall have ample time to paint the 2 small pictures you spoke of before I commence my travels inland. As soon as the house matter is settled, which will probably be tomorrow or the next day, I shall begin one of the pictures and work at them steadily. I don't see that it is possible for me to undertake to do anything this winter for Mr. Morton. Next winter I hope to be quietly settled, where I can do a full season's work. January 21st. I find that I could not send my letter until tomorrow, so I brought it to an abrupt conclusion. In the interim, much has transpired. Our landlord got wind of our intention to go into the mysteries of Syrian housekeeping, and has made every effort to keep us. He gives us the 3 most desirable rooms in the house and a private table, which was absolutely necessary, as the mode of living here is destructive to Yankee stomachs. We are all sitting round a center table brilliantly illuminated by a kerosene lamp. I will tell you how we live by this day's experience. Breakfast at 8. Coffee? Excellent. Bread, eggs, chops, potatoes. Dinner at 2. Soup, mutton, roast veal, cauliflower, mashed potatoes and asparagus, Bavarian cream, fine large oranges, bananas, Damascus apples, figs, dates. At 7, tea, toast, Lebanon honey, quince, jelly. There, don't your mouth water? And more than that, the loveliest blue sky, with snowy mountains, a sapphire sea, and green trees. We like Beirut better and better. The Dodges are in their house. They are lovely people. We are in a state of high expectation for tomorrow's mail. Of course, we shall hear from you both, I hope. Accept our best love and best wishes. If there is anything I can do for you, please let me know. Of course, our remembrances are for both, and for Virginia the less, and for Fairfield. Yours sincerely, Frederick E. Church. Frederick E. Church to Martin J. Heed. Beirut, January 22, 1868. My dear sir, here we are in Syria, all settled and in rave contrast. Everything is to the new thin-shelled city of New York. A rich country for figure painters. As yet I haven't seen the interior, the parts which are to interest the landscape painter especially, albeit this town is sweetly situated on the seashore and backed up by Mount Lebanon, now snow-capped, and the lower hills are covered, section cut out of paper. and desert of sand is drifting upon the city from the south, and is already beginning to swallow up houses. All this could be checked by planting pine trees. But, my dear sir, this is a Turkish province, and the thing won't be done. There is a fine society of Americans here, mostly missionaries, who are very kind and attentive. The climate is superb. I have 5 windows open as I write, and I glance at the Mediterranean on the one hand for ideas as I write, or if the sea fails to furnish them, a glance on the other hand reveals lovely snow peaks. Of course, the ideas must come. A gay animal is the camel, but they are degraded to the carrying of everything from timber to dirt. It is comical to see their riders doing solemn obeisance at every step of their slouching gait. I expect to try camel riding next month, as I've arranged to attempt the trip to Petra with a tough Scotchman at that time. About 12 days of nodding on a camel ought to loosen a man's spine into chronic politeness. I wish you were here to help me. My companions by longer days in places than they may desire, I have made it a point, though to agree upon a certain number of days in each important place. I want to hear from you for various reasons. I trust you will give me with your usual spirit an account of art and other matters at home. Besides, you will be bored with inquiry about me now. You can relieve their anxious minds. I believe I asked you to do me the favor to forward all letters, etc., to my father, Joseph Church, Hartford, Connecticut. I hope you will do so, as I expected some important letters. I have not heard for some time from the States. I wish to hear that times have improved, and that artists are again in good feather. The good time is certainly coming, but we who can draw everything but checks are always ready to have less talented people draw the checks for us. I have had 6 applications for pictures within a few weeks, to my great surprise, as I have seen no one hardly. Our short visit in Paris and London was all spent in seeing, or rather glancing, at the famous things. I did not see Mr. Schenck. I called, and he was out. When he called, I was in London. Then Mrs. Church got quite ill in Paris, and as soon as she was well, we started for Syria. Also, I did not see Mr. Bell, as I only made a flying visit with Osborne to London. Of course, we propose to visit both cities more deliberately and at a better season, and then I shall see people as well as things. I was really sorry, though, to miss Mr. Schenck, because I feared that when I returned to Paris, he would be gone. I sent the book to him. This is such a queer country. I like the houses. They are so solid and capacious, and are decidedly effective, albeit the carpenter's work would amuse our people. Tell Hayes to stop painting buffaloes and come out and paint camels. They are awfully picturesque, but all conceived notions of anatomy must be staggered at the legs and gait of the beautiful beast. I am writing in haste as the mail closes shortly. I could here pass off my penmanship for very elegant Arabic, but as it goes to you, I will modestly call my letter a bad specimen. Do send me a good specimen. Remember me to Tuckerman, whom I mean to write to as soon as I have really seen something. Also to Hayes and the rest. My address is care of I. August Johnson, Consul of the United States of America, Beirut, Syria. I should like to take a chop and a cup of tea with you now on the old table. Come out here, and I will give you as good a spread. We, that is, wife and I, and baby, are well. Mrs. Church desires to be kindly remembered. Yours sincerely, Frederick E. Church. Jaffa, Palestine, March 10, 1868. My dear Palmer, I have seen much since I saw you last, so much indeed that I am at a loss to know what to tell you and what to commence on. First, I must speak of the great disappointment to us that we could not see you before we left. Our leaving a fortnight sooner than we had anticipated hurried me so terribly at the close that I was compelled to forego anything not connected with our journey. We had a long and stormy voyage and finally landed at Brest. What I saw in Paris, or in a week's visit to London, I will not encumber this sheet with, for it is in a great measure an old story. Of course I saw the Louvre and the Royal Gallery, etc., each once. I did not see the exposition, as it was closed 2 or 3 weeks before we reached Paris. By the way, it was a gold and not a silver medal awarded to me. It was finally decided that bronze medals should be given to all who received awards, and so I stepped up by invitation and pocketed 500 francs as the difference between gold and bronze. Landscape art in France and England is crude enough. Jerome is strong in figures, and some others, as you well know. I saw Boughton and wife in London, quietly nestled in a modest home. She seems much attached to him, is modest and womanly, I thought, and spoke strongly of her desire to reside in the States. I took a capital lunch with them. He had two or three things on the easel. Very good. Of course, he inquired particularly about you. After our hurried visit to Paris, we went to Marseille and took steamer for Alexandria, a 6-day trip. 3 days in that dirty, queer city, and we sailed again for Beirut. A 3-day sail, where we arrived all well. We soon got well settled in a comfortable hotel, and we lived there a few weeks, quietly and comfortably. Our rooms are right on the seashore, and we have the murmur of the waves to soothe us to sleep. I dread beginning any descriptions. There is so much to describe. These Oriental cities are strange to our eyes. The houses are usually of stone, with stone-vaulted roofs. The streets, especially the old ones, are narrow, some not more than 10 feet wide, and winding. Often a good part of the streets are arched over, so that the stranger gets about the same impression as if he were walking through a liberal sewer with an occasional aperture for light. On each side of the streets are small rooms, entirely open in front like coal bins. There are shops, and in them are piled up various wares, and at the mouth of the den sits a cross-legged Turk or Greek or Armenian or some other man, demurely awaiting a customer. These streets for the sale of goods are called bazaars, and there is a certain order in the arrangements, for you will find one street devoted to shoe and sandal makers, another to arms and munitions, and to jewelry, etc., etc. Beirut is really a fine city, and the new part has wide and clean streets and fine houses. The dwellings are often quite grand. They have a large room called the court in the center, often 30 by 50 feet or larger, and perhaps 30 feet high, and smaller rooms on each side. These rooms are all paved with marble in patterns. The roofs are flat and cemented over. I have got new and excellent ideas about building since I came abroad. The solidity of everything here would amaze you. There is delightful society in Beirut. The missionaries there are among the most delightful people I have ever met, and their kindness and attentions unremitting. Their influence is prodigious and has worked a revolution in this wretched country. I say wretched because I am thinking of the government, the ignorance of the natives, their bigotry, etc., etc. 5 weeks ago or more, I left Beirut, leaving my family there, and came down to Jaffa with a friend. We were bound to Jerusalem, where we met another gentleman. We had agreed to go to Petra, that strange, mysterious city which few have seen and that few only glanced at. We secured the services of the best dragoman in Syria, Mikhail Elhin. I told Mikhail that I wanted to go to Petra to work, to sketch, and that he must arrange it so that I could. He took 2 sheikhs of tribes friendly to the Petra Bedouins, one robber chief and one other Arab who bristled all over with weapons. We had a train of 16 camels, 2 horses, and 21 men altogether. We were about 12 days from Jerusalem to Petra, passing over terrible and dreary deserts, among tremendous rocks, etc. But we didn't starve. We had 2 tents, a cook and waiter, a soup, 2 courses of meat, vegetables, a pudding, nuts, figs, raisins and oranges, and coffee every day at dinner. Other meals to correspond. From all I could gather, from books and from close inquiry at Beirut and Jerusalem, and from inquiry of the last person who had been there, I learned that the trip was, to a certain extent, one of risk. The Petra Bedouins are entirely beyond all allegiance to any power, and do as they please, that no one is allowed to stay more than 2 days, that above all things no one is allowed to sketch alive there. Indeed, some years ago, an artist who ventured there was shot while attempting a sketch. These and other cheerful bits of information made a rather lugubrious lookout for us. Still, we were in for it, and started. Mikhail was great, and we knew it. His tact, diplomacy, and courage stood us in good past. I took the precaution every day after we had stopped to sketch before the Bedouins of our party, so that they might get accustomed to the thing, and showed them what I did occasionally. I was constantly sketching, too, on camelback, so the fellows soon got quite used to see me at work, I trusted to their speaking of it to the Bedouins at Petra. Finally, the last day before entering Petra arrived. We were right before Mount Hor, on which Aaron was buried, a wild, ragged mountain. The next day, we started winding up a gorge. We were soon among the most terrible crags and yawning chasms I ever saw, jagged black rocks piled up in awful grandeur. We were lost in amazement, and yet, as we progressed, they became still more terrible. The path wound in and out and around, gradually ascending, until we reached the highest point of the pass. I sketched a few of the views, selected more with regard to convenience than for excellence. We descended on the other side, and while the train slowly defiled among the precipices, we scrambled up to the top of Mount Hor. After a short stay, we descended the mountain and commenced a 2 hours' walk for Petra, which is engulfed among the most tremendous of these sublime precipices. The success or non-success of our visit was soon to be decided. The Petra Bedouins had been forewarned of our coming for several days. We soon got among a great number of tombs cut out of the rocks, which interested us strangely, but we hurried on, surmounted a low ridge, and beheld a valley walled in by lofty rocks, full of temples and tombs, cut out of the rock itself. And on a small piece of green in the center, our two white tents, like a couple of innocent mushrooms, we presently reached them, and found about 100 wild Bedouins in a circle, all yelling at the top of their voices, and our old sheik vainly attempting to stem the torrent. Mikhail finally stepped in, requested the sheik to leave the matter to him, and shortly, by his inimitable diplomacy, all things were amicably arranged. We had a good dinner, and retired early so as to have a vigorous day's work. The Arabs were clamoring and jabbering all night, I believe, for I heard them until I went to sleep, and then again the first thing in the morning. At daylight, I made a crevice in the tent, and secretly got 2 or 3 sketches before breakfast, determined to have something to take away. After breakfast, 4 Arabs were apportioned to us as guides and guards. I took my largest portfolio and got Mikhail to instruct them not to disturb me in any way, but simply to attend me, stop when I stopped, and move where I moved. We went straight to the famous Kasni, first as being the best of all the temples at Petra. I saw it, was astonished, and then deliberately opened my 3-legged stool, sat upon it, opened my sketchbook, spread out the paper, sharpened the pencil, took a square look at the temple and a scant one at the Bedouins, and made my first line. They made no motion, and after a few rapid touches, I felt that the mystery was solved in my favor. I could sketch without let or hindrance, a freedom unaccorded before. So now, while the fellows are warming themselves by a fire of sticks, with their matchlocks resting against the cliff, we will take a hasty glance at the Kasni together. In this figure, 2 represents a narrow gorge, varying from 10 feet to 2 feet, between very lofty rocks. 4 is another gorge at right angles, and 3 is the Kasni, as you see directly before the gorge. 2 called the Sikh. The Sikh was the principal entrance to the Petra Valley, so travelers, after traversing for a half mile or more this dark, torturous, wild crevice, came suddenly upon the Kasni. What the effect would be, you can readily imagine, when you read the very rough sketch I shall now give of the temple itself. The rock itself is a sheer precipice of several hundred feet, stained by time and the weather to a gloomy blackness. Right in this rock blazes a temple of a luminous light reddish salmon color. The rock was hewn out and pared down so as to present a perpendicular face, and then the temple was cut out. The natural color of the rock being the rich red-orange that I spoke of, this temple is about 150 feet high, by 80 feet front, a façade with vestibule, columns, etc. There are 2 stories, the upper being curious and of a style peculiar to Petra, a divided pediment, and between a circular temple-like form surmounted by a vase. The architecture is Corinthian and is very rich. The capitals are very beautiful, more so than the Roman Corinthian. The base reliefs are much worn and disfigured, which is strange for the capitals and other delicate ornamentation. The capitals are very beautiful, more so than the Roman Corinthian. The bas-reliefs are much worn and disfigured, which is strange for the capitals, and other delicate ornamentation are as sharp as if just finished. The columns are 5 feet in diameter. Within are 4 rooms, cut out of the rock, the larger 40 feet square and 40 feet high. These are perfectly plain, without any ornament whatever. You can imagine this fairy-like temple blazing like sunlight among those savage black rocks. There are temples, tombs, dwellings, etc., innumerable about Petra, and the valley is one vast heap of hewn stones, and occasionally the remains of a temple of squared stones looms up. I cannot in one letter attempt to describe Petra. It is wonderful, and yet for centuries its very location was unknown. Who built it? The Bible tells. It is Edom, the inheritance of Esau. Edom means red, and the rocks here bear out the name. It was conquered by various powers, but it was the object of terrible prophecies, and is now the strangest scene of desolation I ever saw. There are the most wonderful rock colors here that I ever saw. The Kasni is of a pretty uniform, but usually the most gorgeous colors blend in waving stripes, crossed by bars of varied tints. The most astonishing effects are produced, especially in the cuttings of the tombs, etc., purple shades into varied tints of red and orange, purple and gray follows the same, having lines, perhaps a rich orange, blending into lemon yellow, follows with, while edging usually the graded tints of red, alternate with purple and gray. Certainly, I never saw anything so gorgeous. I made a few rough oil sketches and some hurried pencil studies, but I have got the thing in my head pretty clear. We only stayed about 2.5 days. A coming storm decided us to leave, and so we departed in a driving storm of hail and snow. Our friends, who bid us goodbye with lengthened faces and hoped we would get back safely, are surprised at our success, and especially that I was enabled to sketch. I not only held my big box for oil freely, but the Arabs insisted on carrying it for me, and they were delighted to watch my work. We reached Jaffa 4 days ago, intending to take the steamer of the 9th for Beirut, but a storm prevented the steamer touching, for there is no harbor here, and so we are waiting for the next in this the dirtiest and most picturesque of cities. We are well, and have been. I communicate with my wife by telegraph, so she knows of my safe return from Petra. I am anxious to hear how you and Mrs. Palmer and the family, married and unmarried, are, how you like the new house, what you are doing, etc., etc. Write immediately and direct to me, care of I. Augustus Johnson, Consul General of the United States, Beirut, Syria. My kind regards to all. Your friend, Frederick E. Church. This is my last sheet. Be thankful. Jerusalem, April 1st, 1868. My dear Mr. Osborne, Isabel has undoubtedly given the details of our domestic life in her letter to Mrs. Osborne, as well as our movements in and about Jerusalem. Perhaps the slightest possible sketch of my trip to Petra may prove a pleasant contrast to your delightful wanderings in your beloved Spain, your enthusiasm for which country I can fully appreciate. The Reverend D. Stuart Dodge and a Mr. Fowler, Scotch, accompanied me. Dragoman Michael L. Heen. We left Jerusalem February 12th, driving rain. Spent 3 days in Hebron. Rain, rain. Sheikh Abu Musa, aged rascal, and 17 Arabs, 18 camels, 2 horses, 21 human beings, 18 beasts. So we went pouring, pouring, and pouring all the way to Petra. Lived well. Soup, 2 courses, vegetables, pudding, oranges, nuts, figs, coffee, etc. Regular dinner daily. 11 days from Hebron to Wadi, Petra. Stopped Sundays. Saw great things on the way, but haven't paper enough to particularize. We reached the base of Mount Seir Saturday night after a long day's journey. Rested Sunday in full view of Mount Hor. Could see the tomb like a speck of white on the top. Monday, started early. Ascended the mountain slowly. Scenery terrific in its picturesque grandeur. Black rocks, disturbed in form and awful in color. Visited Mount Hor, tough climb. Reached Petra about sunset, with eyes wide open. From all reports I could gather, the entrance into Petra has the charm of uncertainty. The uncertainty is in getting in at all. The Bedouins are, of course, under no control and have their whims, but Michael was triumphant, and our tents were pitched in the middle of the valley. Tombs and temples were all around us. Also a couple of hundred of the most rascally, picturesque, untamed specimens of humanity you ever saw. These precious representatives of Esau had expected us for days and were all ready for us, all expected it, and were fed at our expense daily. Feasting at night, and the echoes of their midnight yells from the savage cliffs around made sleep difficult. With the morning came my ordeal. I had been assured by the best authorities that I would not be allowed to sketch, as they had superstitious notions. Moreover, a cheerful anecdote of a traveler who was shot when attempting a pencil sketch was told me just before leaving Jerusalem, so I naturally was apprehensive lest I should be prevented from doing what I solely took the trip for. I started off with four ragged guides with long matchlocks for the Kasni, the finest temple in Petra. We picked our way through a wild gorge narrow with precipitous cliffs and suddenly came upon the astonishing temple, a richly sculptured Corinthian facade with a story above, 80 feet front, 140 feet high, all cut out of the rock. The rock is discolored black by time, but this lovely temple shows the true color of the rock, a luminous reddish salmon tint, a tea rose color. By contrast with the black precipices, it shines as if it was self-illuminating. This diagram will give an idea of the position. 2. Sikh and main entrance to Petra, not more than 8 or 10 feet wide in many places. 3. Narrow gorge at right angles. 4. Kosne, dotted line stream which fills some parts of the Sikh 2 entirely. Imagine the effect of this shining temple after a long tramp through the narrow, gloomy gorge in front. Of course, I was too astounded to do anything but stare at the temple for some time. When I came to my senses, I selected my viewpoint, prepared my seat, took my portfolio from the Arab who carried it, opened it, and dashed at the subject with all fury to secure something at least before I could be interrupted. The Bedouins pricked up their ears and approached. One hung over my paper. I pointed to the temple, and then at the paper, sung out, "Teist! Good!" I wasn't shot. I wasn't disturbed. I was let alone, and I am certain made the best of my time. The Arabs got a glimmering of what I was about, and the next day when I attempted color, they were delighted. We stayed 2 days. Of course, I haven't had a great number of oil sketches to show, yet in that short time I got what I went for, and feel well charged with the subject. I made a quantity of pencil studies. We left in a snowstorm, went to Gaza, Ascalon, etc. I drew $60 on Morton's credit today. I think that he wanted me to use his credit in Syria. It is the first time I have drawn on it. Baring's credit half drawn. Petra cost $400. I am painting a sketch of Jerusalem, but the weather has not been very favorable. I have had an invitation from the Governor General of Syria to accompany him to Palmyra and stay 2 weeks. The invitation is just in time, as it suits my time exactly. I have accepted by telegraph. He lives in Beirut. Ordinarily, it is a very expensive trip. The Sheikh charges $200 for protection for 5 persons. Other expenses, of course, heavy. So this invitation is very acceptable. I think our Consul General will accompany us. Returning, I intend to take wife to Baalbek and Damascus, thus terminating our Syrian trip. I have had great difficulty in painting in Beirut. I hoped to have finished one of the pictures before going to Petra, but was compelled to leave several days sooner than I anticipated. The picture is about half done. I have worked over the sky a good deal, taking up much time. I shall make all things right in due time. Mr. Borthwick writes that the books were sent. They had not arrived when I left Beirut, but expect to find them when we return. Isabel enjoys herself. She likes fast horses and fast donkeys. Donkeys are very much sinned against. I respect them. I wish I had a half dozen, especially the Baghdad sort. Someone in Jerusalem handed me a copy of London Illustrated News, of March 7th, I believe, containing a highly flattering notice of the Niagara in London. The first intimation I have had of its being there. I forgot to mention, while speaking of Petra, of the splendid colors in the rocks. ribbons of bright and beautiful colors, winding and twisting and interlacing like marbled paper. Red, orange, yellow, greenish-blue, purple with endless gradations. Petra will paint up strikingly. It is time for me to start for my sketching, and you can't regret abrupt closing of a long letter. My kindest regards to Mrs. Osborne and the children. I saw an account of Mr. Sturgis's retirement from business in a New York paper. Yours sincerely, Frederick E. Church. Beirut, April 18th, 1868. My dear Mr. Osborne, I write this letter thinking that you will probably get it before you leave Paris for the States. I quite envy you the pleasure of getting home again. When I think of the farm and the dear friends who would so warmly welcome our return, I almost wonder that I don't consult with Madame on the propriety of setting our faces homewards. Well, I know that you will relish keenly the picturesque cottage at Garrison's, your toes spread out before a liberal wood fire, and your wife and little ones about you. I am not homesick, yet I should be a fool if I did not feel that home is the blessedest place on the face of the earth. I get plenty of letters, and yet I have not had one item, no matter how small, of bad news from any quarter yet. My parents and sister are remarkably well, and everything works smoothly. The Murrays came all right, I mean the guidebooks, and I am studying up for the mountains. We want to find a lovely, quiet, and cheap place for the summer, where I can accumulate some good sketches. It costs as much to live in Beirut as in New York. Then we have large, lofty rooms, a beautiful view, and fresh air. Isabel has thrived here, and the baby is sturdy as well. Mrs. Carnes is well. All are well. So I cannot complain. I have not painted as much as I expected. It is difficult to mix indoor and outdoor work. I have, however, painted one of the two pictures you asked me to do, and will shortly forward it to Mr. Borthwick. Isabel insists upon it, that it is one of my very best works. I wished to make it so, but painting in a strange room, amid strange scenes, etc., has so much influence upon the senses, that I myself cannot judge of its comparative merits. The scene is tropical, just before sunset, and I think I am right in believing the sky to be a success for me. I had a great disappointment in Jerusalem, owing to the weather. The first 2 days were pleasant, but I was so much disturbed by my sea voyage that I was unable to do much afterwards for the 2 weeks we were there. We had rain and clouds and high winds all the time. Still, I secured the main thing, sketches of the city as seen from Olivet. I have all material sufficient for an elaborate view of Jerusalem, and saw the city under some fine effects. The time was limited, because having an invitation from the Governor-General of Syria to accompany him to Palmyra, I must needs be in Beirut on a certain day. Of course, Mrs. Church was with me at Jerusalem, and enjoyed her visit very much indeed. The presence of crowds of pilgrims enhanced the interest. In Jerusalem I encountered Jerome and Mr. Goupil's son, with several other Frenchmen. All had come through the desert together and had entered Petra, but were insulted and robbed, and they left in high disgust. The Pasha will start about the 27th of this month for Palmyra. He had intended to go on the 9th or 10th, but news came that Yusef Karam, an exile who formerly made a great deal of trouble in Lebanon, had escaped and returned to Syria. This intelligence prevented the Pasha from going at the time proposed. But lately intelligence has been received that the rebel is still in Europe. The Pasha goes to Palmyra to see about establishing military posts for the protection of the Baghdad caravans, and takes with him 3,000 soldiers and 3 batteries. This is too fine an opportunity to be neglected, as I shall be fully protected, and saved the heavy backsheesh demanded by the Sheikh of Palmyra for an escort. The Pasha proposes to stay from 10 to 15 days in Palmyra. A capital photographer will accompany me, one who has been long desirous of going to Palmyra for views, and I expect to have Mikhail Elhin, the dragoman who took me so successfully to Petra. I propose to take Mrs. Church with me to Damascus, whence we start, 3 or 4 days previously, so that we can do Damascus without losing time. Mrs. Carnes went to Damascus last week with some friends and enjoyed the visit much. After Palmyra, Baalbek, and then we leave. The day after tomorrow is mail day. I hope to get another letter from you with the information that you and Mrs. Osborne are still intensely enjoying Spain. We will all have something to talk about when we meet. I have drawn $260 on the Morton letter of credit. I thought I had better save the other for the summer trip, as we might be located somewhere where Morton has no correspondent. Of course, the picture I have painted so far, as its value goes, will be a set-off to a portion of the loan you so kindly made me, unless you prefer it to be otherwise. In due season, I will make all right. Next winter I wish to be situated that I can work steadily for several months. These pleasant warm climates draw one out of doors, and this season especially I was unable to do much indoors on account of the necessity that I should take advantage of my being in Syria by studying the scenery. I haven't got so bulky a portfolio as I brought from Jamaica, but I have got some original things and plenty of material. I have seen some highly flattering notices of the Niagara in London journals. The first intimation I had of the picture being in London was a very marked politeness which certain Britishers showed me in Jerusalem after a mail day. I accounted for this with certainty when I was shown a copy of the Illustrated London News next day, containing a long and complimentary article, O Albion. My wife is a celebrated donkey rider, twice a day, generally in company with her mother. She has her rides. These white Baghdad donkeys are wonderful little beasts. They walk right away from a horse and are untiring and very easy and amiable. I wish I could transport a couple into your stable at Garrison's. Master Freddy Josie is a connoisseur of donkeys. Some he will ride, of course carried, for hours with delight. Others he rejects in a few minutes. There are Americans innumerable in Syria. All landlords look to them for their profits. The few Englishmen here stand with their hands in their pockets and exclaim, "Most extraordinary, these Americans!" A number of old maids are in Syria, traveling without escort. They give our consuls enough to do. They hook themselves upon any party and won't be shaken off. There was a Mr. Terry here, a partner of E.D. Morgan. Mr. Terry, who is a most agreeable and gentlemanly man, had the misfortune in India lately to have a cook strike him in the eye, which eye is entirely disabled. He came to Syria, and last week left with his wife and a young lady in charge. Just before their departure, an old maid who had quartered herself for weeks on one of our missionaries, hearing of the opportunity, coolly told Mrs. Terry that she would go with them to America, and took passage in the same ship. Mr. Terry, with his blind eye and two ladies, thought he had enough to do without her. He was aghast, and in self-defense actually hired a courier at his own expense to take care of the lorn woman. Our countrymen generally appear to great advantage in Syria, and are much courted by landlords on account of their liberality. One notable example to the contrary was a Mr. Fettridge, who compiled Harper's Guidebook. He disgusted everybody and blackmailed all the landlords on account of the guidebook. Ask Dr. Bellows when you see him what he thinks of Fettridge. Beirut is looking peculiarly charming just now. The mulberries are in full leaf, which gives a vivid greenness to the landscape. The silkworms are hatched, and the picking of the leaves commenced. Silk is a chief product here, and much is woven. Still, we find it difficult to select and make favorable purchases. The great cities, London, Paris, New York, etc., are, after all, the best places to buy almost anything. By the way, your bootmaker, Nevins, is a failure. The boots he made me wore right down and burst open in a short time. The leather was poor and spongy, and the sewing decidedly bad. An old pair I had, by Pakalin, New York, under worse usage, are in good order now, while Nevins's gave out and required cobbling. Perhaps he thought I was a transient customer. I am spinning out my letter as usual. Our best love to you both and to the children. Yours sincerely, Frederick E. Church. P.S. April 21st. As my letter has waited for the mail, I will add a line. I have completed all arrangements for Palmyra, and we have secured seats in the diligence for Thursday, day after tomorrow, and expect to start for Palmyra somewhere between Monday and Wednesday. Of course, all depends upon the Pasha movements. Isabel will have two parties of friends in Damascus to bring her back to Beirut. I have had many people in yesterday and today to see the picture. It is varnished and looks very well. I have had a capital box made for it, and if possible will have it insured. During the summer I hope to be able to paint the other one. If you should not get this letter until you reach the States, I would then like to have you direct hereafter to care of Holtenzenner and Company, Paris, for we shall leave here in about 6 or 7 weeks. Yours sincerely, F.E.C. Mrs. Church is anxious about those photographs which we had taken in Paris, and which you were kind enough to attend to. We took 4, and there were to be 8 more, and an extra dozen besides. If it is all right, please relieve her mind in your next. We have had the baby taken here, one on a camel with me, and another on a donkey with his mother. F.E.C. Dear Mr. O., I enclose this, which is a great trial, no doubt. Yours, Fred.